We are in Shmuel Aleph, Parak Tet, Chapter 9. We are actually in the middle of a parak, so I'll give you the quick rundown of what's going on. Okay, so previously, in the last parak, in Parak Tet, the Jewish people asked for a king, and they were eventually told, you know, after a little bit of back and forth, that they can have a king. And now in this parak test, we are introduced to Shaul. He's not yet the king. He's just a guy described as, you know, very as a person who's tov, he's good, and he is also physically fit, he's taller than everyone, he's strong, and what happens in the beginning of the parak is his father loses some donkeys, they go wandering off, and Shaul and a servant go off chasing them, and they go really far to try to track down these donkeys, and eventually they find themselves outside a city. The Navi calls it Sus, and there Shmuel HaNavi is currently visiting. So Shaul, you know, he has the idea, you know, maybe we've been gone for 3 days. It's probably time to go back home. My father's probably worried more about us at this point than about the donkeys. And the servant encourages Shaul to continue on, and he tells him that there's this Navi, there's this Roeh, this seer, this prophet in the city, and he should be able to help us. So in Pasuk Tet, we have an interesting Pasuk, right after, let's start from Pasuk Ches. In Ches it says, Vayosef ha-nar la-anose Shaul, and the lad continued to answer Shaul, Vayomer, I should really fill you in, there's a little bit of back and forth. The servant had said that they should go and see the prophet, and Shaul said, but we don't have anything to bring him. We have to bring him a gift or some kind of payment, which is interesting in itself. And the lad, the Nar, says, by Yosef HaNar L'anos Shaul, he continued to respond to Shaul, by Yomer, and he said, Hinei nimtzav yadi reva shekel kasef, behold, in my hand I have a quarter of a shekel of silver, v'nasati le'isha elokim, and I'll give this to the isha elokim, this man of God, v'higidlanu estarkenu, and he'll be able to tell us our way, tell us what to do, tell us what's going on. And now, in Pasuk Tet, we have a very significant Pasuk. And it's a break-in from the narrator, according to almost all Mefarshim. It says, Lefanim b'Yisrael, previously in Israel, Ko amar ha'ish b'lechto lidrosh ha'lokim, so would say a man when he would go to seek out God, l'chu v'nelcha ad haroeh, not to seek out God necessarily, but to ask God something if he had a question. So he would say, let's go until the roeh. Let's go see the roeh, the seer. That's what they referred to the local prophet as a roeh, as a seer. Ki la'navi hayom, because that which we now call a navi, Yikarei lefanim haroeh. They used to call a roeh, a seer. Navi breaks in with that little comment, and then the story continues with Shaul's response, and he's going to say, okay, fine, let's go and see him. So what is going on with this pasuk? Why is the Navi breaking in and telling us this? Will we just be surprised that it used the word roeh before to refer to the prophet, and we're not used to that? What is the significance of that? So actually, Dan, if I could borrow this for a moment. So in the introduction to this Navi, Kamotzei Shaul Rav, they bring an article from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky that was printed in The Oraisa Journal in Tufshin Nun Bav. So that was 30-something years ago, I guess. No, 32 years ago, I think. And it was actually written as part of a eulogy of Rabbi Yecheskel Abramsky. So he has a whole article about this this pasuk and how it fits in, but the basic, try to sum it up. So there's a couple of questions that come up with this verse. Again, they're going to see the Roeh, the seer, and the prophet, the Navi, breaks in and says, you know, they used to call a prophet a Roeh, a seer, and now they call it, that which we call a Navi now used to be called a Roeh. So as we said, the first question is, why is this here? Why is this an important point to make here? And secondly, it's also interesting, because who wrote Sefer Shmuel? Shmuel. Shmuel HaNavi, before his death, wrote Sefer Shmuel. Now, how long is it from now until Shmuel dies? So it's only going to be about 2 years. So here you have, somewhere towards the end of his life, he's writing Shmuel, and he says, back in the day, 2 years ago, they used to call a prophet a Roeh. But, you know, that which everyone calls a prophet now, a Navi, they used to call a Roeh. So it's just interesting, because it's not like this was so long ago. This was within the last couple of years that this shift took place. So
he didn't want to refer to himself.
What?
Because he didn't want to refer to himself.
What do you mean?
It was like an act of a diva.
To say what?
That it changed by me.
Oh. Then by saying that it happened, by implying that it happened a long time ago,
yeah,
it would sort of move the attention away from himself?
It happened by him. It had to change, right?
Right. So what are you saying? That by saying that... By
I'm
implying
saying
that
maybe it's an act of a diva. Saying it this way, instead of saying, oh, it happened by me, I was the first to be called a Navi, he's saying...
Make it sound like it was like a while ago.
This is my own theory.
Okay, Dan, you want to say something? So that's going to, we're going to get that. It's not from this pasuk. It's when they meet him. Right, in the Torah we have that, you know, like before there were kings in Israel, a different continent. Right, so each time you have that, you have to ask the question of what, you know, what's the purpose of that. But especially this one, right, what's going on here? Why is this an important point to make? Right, there may have been more than one Roeh, but they don't call him by name, even throughout all these psukim. They just say, you know, once they go and meet him, so then the pasuk describes him by name and tells us who this Roeh that they're referring to is, and it's Shmuel. But fine. So Rabbi Yaakov says that it's not just, you know, that they changed the term and, you know, the language has changed, and it wasn't simply that. There was a significant shift that was going on right now. So he says, we say in the beginning of Avos, right? Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. Moshe received the Torah at Sinai, and he transferred it to Yoshua, and Yoshua to the Zekanim, to the elders, and the elders to the Nevi'im, and the Nevi'im, the prophets, they gave it over to the men of the great assembly. So who are these Zekanim? Who are the elders that it talks about? So, good, it probably includes them. But there's a Rashi at the very beginning, we learned it in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, and Rashi says there that the shoftim, the chieftains, the judges of Israel, they are what's referred to as the Zakenim in this Mishnah. They were that step in the, they were that ring, that link in the Mesorah. So you have Yoshua, and who, right, because the elders really kind of precede Yoshua in a way. So the elders, the 70 elders, or they're at the time of Yoshua. So who did Yoshua pass it on to? He passed it on to what's after Sefer Yoshua, Sefer Shoftim, the judges. So that's a Rashi, the very beginning, it says, of Shmuel, it says, Vahi ish echad min ha-ramasayim tofim, and Rashi there comments this idea. He says, Moshe gave the Torah to Yoshua, and Yoshua to the Zakenim, and then he says, and each Shofate handed it to the next Shofate, as if the Shoftim are the Zakenim. That's what Rashi says, until it came to Eli HaKohen, who we learned about, and from him, it went to Shmuel. That's what Rashi says. Now, Rashi's also explained to us, in a way, why Shmuel is a separate Sefer from Shoftim. Shmuel wrote Shoftim also, by the way. So, why did he keep his Sefer, you know, separate? It wasn't just so he could stand out and have a Sefer named after himself. But it's because a significant shift took place between the time of the Shoftim and the time of Shmuel. So what was that? So the Shoftim, as you know, Mr. Sapper has pointed out many times, were not just judges, right? They weren't simply the people who you went to for a judgment. They weren't simply prophets. They, you know, some of them weren't prophets at all. They were the leaders of the Jewish people as well. They were the chieftains, as you like to call them, right? They were the essentially the kings. They weren't kings. They're the political leaders. There are differences between a melech and a shofet. The Abarbanel enumerates a whole list of differences. We've talked about some of them in the past. But they were sorry, one second. I just want to describe it exactly as he describes it. Right, so they were both the leaders, and they were also in charge of the Mesorah. They were in charge of making sure the Mesorah of Torah, the tradition of Torah, was kept intact and passed on. Now, at that time, he says, there were also local prophets, roeh, a seer. The person had their own issue that they needed to take care of. They would go to a roeh. It's actually discussed in this week's Parsha Yisro coming up. When Yisro tells Moshe, you know, why are the people standing here, you know, the whole day? So part of Moshe's response is, Yavo ha'ame lai lidrosh elokim. Exactly these words, to be doresh Hashem, to seek out God. Meaning, the Ramban says, if they have a sick person in the family, they want to know if he's going to get better, or to have Moshe daven for him. I think the Ramban even mentions our story. If they lost their donkeys, they would go to the roeh to find out what happened to them. So this guy, the roeh, was someone who, you know, there might have been many of them around, many people who had Ruach HaKodesh, who had the ability to have prophecy, and you could go to them if you had a personal issue. But they weren't these political leaders. They weren't involved politically. They were, you know, the rub of the local town, basically. The spiritual leader of smaller areas. Now, well, what I'm saying is the roeh didn't wear something. He had one hat. He was just, you know, the rabbi or the navi, the prophet that they could go to. But he wasn't the political leader. He wasn't in charge of passing on the Mesorah. At the end of Shoftim, so then is the beginning of the period of kings, the beginning of Melachim. So the Melachim, the kings, they were the political leaders of Israel, but they were not the teachers. They were not in charge of the Masorah. The Navi, who previously was a Roe, the Navi who was involved in private matters, now was bumped up to a position of you know, a political leader in a way, or not political, but sorry, but the spiritual leader on a grander scale. So while the Shoftim were both in charge politically and of the spiritual guidance of the nation as a whole, when the Tikufa, when the period of the kings began, so the kings were specifically in charge of the political aspect, and there was now a position called a Navi, who was the spiritual leader of the people as a whole, you know, like the Gadol Adar. So, yeah, church and state. So, I don't know how common they were after that. Let's see if he says something about it. I don't remember the whole article. He says the difference was that the Shoftim were at their essence, they were, he says, giants of Torah. They themselves, the Shoftim themselves, were first and foremost great in Torah, great in spirituality, and that's how they became the leaders. And they also then had the job of as being the political leader of the chieftain of Israel as well. But and one of the differences that between a shofet and the king is that a shofet is not inherited; it's not passed down to the child. It's completely merit-based. They were tremendous people on their own in their own right who became the shoftim, became the judges. Malchus, kingship, is hereditary, passed down. So of course, you know, Shaul HaMelech, we're going to talk, you know, he had shortcomings, but he was a great person. David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech, right? Many of the kings were great, but many of them were not so great, because Shaul is something else.
Wasn't there a problem
with not, no, only once the, it says, though, Yasser Shevet Mi Yehuda, the staff, the scepter will not pass from Yehuda once it comes to Yehuda. That's what the Ramban says on that
one.
Once David became exactly, only from Yehuda. But before that,
problem with the Chashmonayim.
Right. That's what Ramban says, that the Chashmonayim were not, so they were Kohanim, they should not have made themselves king, the Maccabees. That's what the Ramban says. So that right, that would be the defense for that. Yeah, as opposed to a king, right, did not necessarily have that spiritual stature in his own right, and therefore had his right-hand man, the Navi, to be the spiritual leader. So he says at the time of Shmuel is where this shift took place, during the lifetime of Shmuel. So earlier in Shmuel's life, he was both the political leader and the Navi, you know, and the spiritual leader passing on the Masorah. However, once he appointed the first king, Shaul, and then he also appointed David, so then this change took place where Shmuel HaNavi was now just, he was the Navi, he was no longer the Shofet, and right, I'm just trying to figure out what happened to the Roe. What happened to the Roe? Right. So I think what he's saying is that from then on they would also go to the Navi, but for those personal questions. But the position of the prophet kind of changed. While previously it was a shofet who was in charge of spiritual matters and the Masorah, and the Roe, the prophets, were people that you just went to for personal issues. Once a king was appointed, who didn't have his own merit and his own righteousness necessarily, So at that point, once that we started that system, so then the prophets became the not just your local prophet and you went to for your own issues, but they took on a grander position of spiritual leader of the Jewish people, and at that point they is what the name shift represents, from becoming just Roeh, just the seer who you went to for your personal issues, to being the Navi, the one who talked about either the one who spoke, the one who rebuked, the one who guided the people, and perhaps also related to bringing the people along from the Shoresh Bo. So that was the shift that took place, and that's what's representing here right at this moment when we're about, Shaul and Shmuel are about to meet, right? This is monumental. The shift is now taking place. Up till now, it's been Shoftim. We're about to appoint the king. In just a few psukim, Shmuel is going to hint to Shaul that he's going to be the king, and shortly after he's going to anoint him. So this is, as they're about to meet, the moment where the shift is going to take place, where the Navi's position is going to change, or really it's the Shofet's position. There's no longer going to be Shoftim, there's going to be a king, and the Roeh, the job of the Roeh will be elevated from Roeh to Navi. It happens to be, it's a little confusing here, I think, because Shmuel was both already. So Shmuel was the Shofet. So he was already the leader. So his own position didn't really change in terms of being spiritual leader of Israel. But for future people, those who wouldn't have been the Shofet, the leader on their own, they would have just been a Roeh. Now those prophets would now become a Navi, would be a leader. Sorry.
So this shift is going to happen because Hashem has to demand Shmuel to do
it. Yes. Yeah.
It's a shift that Hashem's will.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So that's right.
What was the traditional role of the Shofet, of the Kohen? Right, so he was the Shofet also. Yeah, he was a busy guy. That's why he actually... We mentioned that he it's the pasuk describes how he was old and tired. So certainly Klal Yisrael needs many teachers, right? And the Kohanim traditionally served the role of teachers, but who was like responsible for the at the top of the chain? I guess we're saying for the Masorah. That's what he's saying. The responsibility fell on the Shofet, the leader. Okay, fine.
So what he was saying about Hashem's will, I'm not sure. It's Hashem sort of was going along with it here. It's not that he was considered right, that it was considered something good.
Well, he didn't command them. I think what he means is when they asked for a king, so it wasn't, Shmuel wasn't happy and Hashem wasn't happy. But Hashem said, okay. So, right.
He permitted it, but he didn't really want it. Hashem didn't really want it. He sort of went along with it. Yeah.
Fine. Okay. Pasuk Yod. Vayomer Shaul Enaro, and Shaul said to his lad, his servant, Tov Tvarcha, your word, your advice is good. Lecha Nelecha, let's go. We'll go and see the prophet, the Roeh, and we'll find out what happened or why we're here. What's the story with these donkeys? Vayelchu El Ha'ir, and they went to the city, Asher Sham Isha Elokim, that there currently was this man of God, Shmuel. Hema Olim B'Ma'aleh Ha'ir, they were going up the steps, or the ramp of the city, the Hema Matsu Ne'aros, and they found some young girls there, Yotzos Lisho Mayim, who were going out to draw some water, Tayomru Lahen, and they said to them, Hayesh Bazeh Haroeh, and they, meaning Shol, and the servant, they asked the girls, is the Roeh here? Hayesh Bazeh Haroeh, is the seer, is the prophet here in town? Vatanena osam. And they answered them, Vatomarna, and the girl said, Yesh, he is here. Hinei lefanecha. Behold, he is before you. Chazal have a drasha on the word Yesh, that it says elsewhere, I don't remember the pasuk offhand, the Yesh asher yeh ha'anan says, and it has the word Yesh in a pasuk related to a cloud on the Olam Moed, I believe. So they have a drasha here that they were pointing out, Yesh, you know, look, there's the cloud there on his tent, on his house, like he's saying. The Shekhinah is here. Yes, indeed, the prophet is in this town. And they continue and they say, Maher, hurry, ata now, ki ayom bala here, because he's come to the city today. Ki zevach ayom la'am babama, because the nation is going to bring some kind of zevach, seemingly some kind of sacrifice on the bama, on the altar. We are currently between the time of Mishkan Shiloh and the Beis HaMikdash. The Mishkan is currently in Nov, and it's a time of Heter Abamos. You're allowed to bring karbanos on individual altars, and so that's what, seemingly, according to most opinions, they were bringing a karban here. And the girls continue, Kivoachem ha'ir, when you come to the city, Kain Timtzun Oso, you'll find him, Biterem Ya'ale Habamasa Lechol, before he goes up to the Bama to eat from the meat of the karban, Ki lo yochal ha'am ad bo'o, because the nation will not eat until he comes, Ki hu yivarech ha'zevach, because he's going to make the bracha, he's going to make a bracha on this zevach, on this offering, or on this meat, Acharei kein yochu hakruim, after that, those who are invited will eat, V'ata alu, and now, go, ki oso, chehayom timtzun oso, because now you will find him. So they're basically telling him, you know, Shmuel is about to leave, hurry up, because otherwise you're going to miss him. Now, in order to tell him this, they, like, drag on for, like, 5 minutes, you know, there's this, and that, and hurry, you know, duh. So is this just, you know, girls, you know, that's how girls talk, or is there more to the story? So, that's my focus. Is it just how girls talk, or is it more to the story? So, you have to wait and find out.
They were just trying to be helpful.
Well, no, that's exactly right. That's an important point. All they said was, is the prophet here? The answer was yes. Nothing else is needed to be said to answer the question. They said, yes, he's here, and he's about to leave, and you have to hurry, and that, right? They have a whole long thing, because he's going to make the bracha, and they can't eat until he makes the bracha, so hurry.
What kind of a decent human being would just say yes, not tell him to hurry up, because if you don't, you're going to miss him. And yeah, he would have been here, but he'll be gone.
Even that, they go beyond, and they say, you know, they're going to eat from the carbon, and they can't eat until he comes, so he's going to come. You know, you could have, if you really want to hurry him up, say, he's about to leave, you should hurry. You know, that's all you need to say. Like, so, there's a Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara is trying to figure out a source that you say a bracha before you eat something, right? Because we know there's a d'oraisa to bench after we eat, and that's learned from the pasuk, v'achalta, v'savata, uveirachta, and you should eat, and you should be satisfying, you should bench. And that's one of the only two brachos d'oraisa, to eat, to make a bracha afterwards. The Gemara is trying to find a mekar, a source, for making a bracha before, which is the Rabbanon, but it's looking for some supporting pasuk to this concept. So the Gemara says, I only know you make a bracha afterwards. How do I know that you make a bracha before? And it brings a couple of sources, and then it brings Rabbi Nassan Omer, Eino Tarech, I don't need any of your answers. Harehu Omer, it says in Shmuel Aleph, Tarech Test, our pasuk, Kivoachem Oyer, when you come to the city, you'll find him, da da da, Kihu Yivarech HaZevach, because he will make a bracha on the Zevach, Achrei King, Yochel HaKru, and then after that, those who are invited will... So it says, so here we have the source of the... And you make a bracha before you eat. Okay, so very interesting. The Kohanim are not here. This is not in Nof. This is in Suf, I think it was called. This is in a town. This is a private altar. I believe that actually Kohanim are not allowed to bring karbanos on private altars. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I believe that only non-Kohanim are allowed. I have to look that up, but yeah.
Couldn't he have been making the bracha on the act of slaughtering?
Possibly.
Which is something that is done today, is it not?
Yes, there is a bracha on Shemitah.
Here it says, Ki hu yivorech hazivah.
Right, so does zevach refer to the act of slaughtering or it's just referring to the karban? Okay, but it's ambiguous, right. So interestingly, Rashi here tells us, what's the bracha? Rashi on in Shmuel, and I think maybe even Rashi on the Gemara as well. Yeah, Rashi says, what's the bracha? Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu melech ha'olam, asher kidishanu b'mitzvosav, v'tzivanu le'chol es hazevach. So what does that mean? It's not the bracha on Shvita, but it's a different bracha. It sounds like a bracha that's specifically on a karban. That Hashem commanded us, He sanctified us with His mitzvot, and He commanded us to eat from karbanah. That comes from this pasuk. It says, "Asher yivar," that they won't eat until Shmuel comes and makes the bracha. And what's the bracha? Rashi says, "It's Asher kedushanu mitzvosav etzivanu lechol hazevach." So what's the issue with this? What's the problem with this Rashi? So what's the Gemara trying to learn out? The Gemara is trying to learn out how we make a bracha before we eat. Which is a birchas hanenin. It's a bracha for benefit, for personal enjoyment. When we eat food, what's asher kedushanu mitzvosav? That's a birchas hamitzvah. That's a bracha on a mitzvah, a bracha of a mitzvah of eating from a karban. So the Marsha asks on Rashi that I don't understand. According to you, we still don't have. The Gemara is telling us we have a source here for making a birchas hanenin. Birchas hamitzvot. Yeah, we also make hamotzi, right? The matzah, asher kedushanu is the birkas hamitzvah. That's a very good example. And the hamotzi is the birkas hanen. So it's on the hana, on the benefit. So Marsha asked Rang Rashi that you don't have a source for, according to you, we don't have a source for birkas hanen. No, but the Gemara is trying to prove that you make a bracha before you eat a birkas hanen. So what's the proof? Because Shmuel made a bracha before they had this karban. But what bracha did Shmuel make? According to Rashi, he made a birkas hamitzvah. So that wouldn't be a good proof. You need to find me a proof for someone making a birkas hanen. Maybe all you have to make is a birkas hamitzvah. Who says you make a shahako on this meat? So, nehenen, like to benefit, to hana. So the Marsha actually argues. He first of all, he quotes a Medrash, a Mechilta, and he says that the Medrash actually says, Kihu yivarech hazevach, it quotes the pasuk, he will bless on, he make a blessing on the zevach. Rabbi Nassan Amar, it's the same Rabbi Nassan, and it says, Rabbi Nassan Amar, mikan lebracha lifnei hamazon. From here we learn that you make a bracha before food. So the Mechilta, like our Gemara, is bringing it as a proof that you make a bracha before food. But the implication is definitely that it's not a birkas hamitzvah, it's that you make a bracha before food. So therefore, okay. Well, unless there's something special about meat. What is? But what is special about meat that would have it require a bracha that other, not as opposed to any other food? But what does that have to do with a bracha? The bracha would be because you're going to benefit from food. But if the bracha is shahakol on meat, so why wouldn't we also make a shahakol on milk or a hamotzi on bread? What is what?
You're making it on meat, and now you want to generalize it to all foods.
Right, I'm asking. This would be the source. I don't see, unless you have a reason to differentiate, then why? But
a lot of people refrain from meat. The first generation, Hashem didn't allow generations up until Noah to eat meat. It's a special.
Okay, fine.
And the rabbis say,
Right. The question
it's
is, does
that
create
so clear? Huh? That's not so clear that you have to eat meat. It depends why you don't want to eat
okay.
meat.
Okay. So anyway, so the Marsha says that that indeed the bracha that they made on the meat was shehakon yabidvaro. That's the bracha that's referred to in this pasuk, and he argues on Rashi, and therefore you have a source for this. Now, the Tzlach defends the position of Rashi with an interesting imprint from the Pasuk. The Tzlach says as follows. So he says that it's an interesting idea, and he's aware that it's interesting, and I'll tell you why in a second. But the Tzlach says, if you read the Pasuk, so it says, the girls tell him, well, Yochal Ha'amat Bo'o, the people won't eat until he comes. Hihu Yivarech HaZevach. Because he's the one who's going to make the bracha on the Zevach. He's the one who's going to make the bracha on the Zevach. Implying, but the bracha on the meat itself, you know, that everyone's going to make. Just Shmuel is going to make the bracha on the Zevach. So the Tzlach says there's a diuk here. Indeed, the bracha on the Zevach, on the Karban, was like Rashi says. It was a bracha, birkas hamitzvos, it was a sher kiddushon mitzvosav, and it was a birkas hamitzvos, and you can't learn from there that to a birkas hanenin, that you make a bracha before you eat. But there's an inference here. Hu yivarech hazevach, he's going to make the bracha on the zevach, but everyone else will make brachos on their own food. So, okay. So, the Tzlach. Now, in order to really appreciate the what's so unique about his pshat, let's continue a couple more lines in the Gemara. So the Gemara goes on and it says, "The kolkach lama." What was all this for? Meaning, why are they, as we pointed out, all that Shaul asked was, is the seer in town? Is the roa here? And then they launch into this whole long answer. So kol kach lama. So the Gemara's first answer is lefi she'anashim dabrani otein, because women like to talk a lot. That's the Gemara's first answer. Then it gets a little more serious. Shmuel says k'dei l'stakol b'yofio shel shol. Shol was this young, handsome, the tall man. And they wanted to have more time to gaze upon him, so they kept him there, and they kept talking to him. Maybe we would use the word flirting. It could be. They had good intentions. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, and Rabbi Yochanan says it was for a different reason. A malchus, a kingship, does not touch the next one, even the thickness of a hair, meaning that there was a very specific time where the transfer was going to take place, from Shmuel being in charge to Saul being in charge. And Hashem sort of put it into their actions to delay Saul in order that everything should happen at exactly the right moment. The other idea, and I think it's brought out in the Medrash more, is that we're going to see shortly that, if we have time, that Hashem appeared to Shmuel the day before and told him that Saul was going to come. And he told him, you know, at this time tomorrow, he's going to come. And there was a very specific time at which Saul was supposed to arrive. So everything here, and Malbim mentions this here on the Pesukim, was in order to time it exactly so that Saul would arrive at exactly the moment that Hashem told Shmuel he was going to arrive. So according to this last opinion in the Gemara, and according to this opinion in the Medrash, and what the Malbim is bringing, is that Hashem sort of points, you know, put it into their minds that they should, you know, schmooze him up a bit in order to delay him just ever so much so that he would arrive to see Shmuel exactly the time that Hashem had told him that he would arrive. So, no, right, no, they didn't know that. Just Hashem put it into their minds to talk to them for a little bit longer. But it wasn't coming from themselves. This would be the defense. The way that the Medrash presents it, actually, is it says, like, you know, it argues on the previous opinion. It says you're going to make the girls of Israel into these, like, it's used the word zonas, into prostitutes. Like, you know, don't say that they were just trying to flirt with him. No, Hashem arranged this so that they would delay him just enough so that he would arrive at exactly the right time. So just coming back to the tzlach for a minute, the tzlach has to now deal with, the tzlach is learning, the Gemara is learning out this blessing from an inference from what these girls said, right? The girls said, remember, either because they're dabranios, because they like to talk a lot, or because Hashem put these words, you know, wanted them to drag on, but it comes out very interesting because we're learning this halacha, the Gemara is trying to learn it, from their words. So if they just mentioned the bracha, you know, so that would be one thing. If they said, you know, before he makes the bracha, they're really just, you know, mentioning a fact, you know, that, and so then we would be able, it would make sense to derive, you know, that you make a bracha from their words. But the tzlach, and he's aware of this, he's learning it from an inference from their words. He's saying, they said, you know, that they're not going to because Shmuel is going to make the bracha on the zevah. Now the Gemara says, we're going to infer from their words, but there's going to be another blessing that everyone else is going to make. So that's what the tzlach says. So the tzlach is aware that, you know, he says, you know, and even though that they were dabranios, that they were just talking a lot, so what we mean is that they were talking about things that weren't relevant to what Shaul had asked. That's what the Gemara means. But certainly we can still read into their words and learn things from their words. So that's one of the sources in the Gemara for making a bracha before we eat. Right? Okay. Pasuk Yudalid Vayalu Hoir, and they went up to the city. Hema Ba'im Beso Hoir. They were coming into the city. Bine Shmuel Yotzei Likrasam, and just right on at that moment, Shmuel is leaving his house. He's going out to greet them. La'lo Sabama. So the Mefarshim say, someone says, I don't remember who, that he made it look like he was going out to the Bama, but he was well aware that Shaul, to the Bama, to the altar, to bring the carbon. But he was well aware that that at that very moment Shaul was going to come strolling into town. Okay. Yeah, we're gonna hold here. Okay.
Thank you.
So I think